You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Aileen Quinn from Annie, the 1982 film, and you're listening to Flopcast.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 401.
On Flopcast.net.
Yes, yes. Hello, Cornflake.
Hi, Kevin.
You know what we're doing today? We do this every year.
Yes, and I'm so glad I got all my enthusiasm out in the previous show.
Yeah, we had all our fun last week. And now, yeah, we do these memorial shows every year. This is our memorial show, part one. I believe this will be a two-parter.
That is a wise way to go.
We started doing this last year. We broke the memorial show into two episodes. I think that's the move.
It was so wise to do that because in previous years, these shows, they just went on forever.
They took way too long.
It took a long time to recover afterwards.
Yes, yes. So, memorial show part one, we're going to get into everyone that we lost from the world of pop culture and whatnot over the course of the year 2019. We're going to cover half of that this week. We're also going to cover this week National Whatever Day.
National Whatever Day!
Yeah, I guess before we death it up.
That's the attitude.
Get this segment out of the way.
We're going to death it up. That's the fun, positive spin you're putting on the memorial show.
Okay, you know I try. I don't have much to work with on this particular topic. But
what are we doing?
January 14th is National Plan for Travel Day.
Plan for travel.
Plan for travel. So earlier today, I was on smarttravel.com, and I was reading about the seven things that will ruin your trip if you forget to pack them.
Oh, let's see. A skink.
Skink.
I hate when I'm halfway to the airport, and I realize I didn't pack a skink.
You don't want to be borrowing somebody else's skink.
No, that'd be weird.
Yeah.
You don't want to poke around at the airport, nudging people at the airport. Pardon me, do you have a skink I could use?
No,
you want your own creepy little lizard slithering around in your luggage.
Right.
Is that what it says on your smart travel website?
I'm trying to figure out which number skink was. Yeah, I'm having a hard time reading my notes, so okay.
let's assume they all say skink.
All right, 1 through 7.
Yes.
Skink.
Yes. When you're traveling, do you make a trip list? You write down everything that you have to pack?
This isn't going to surprise you in the least, Kevin, but I do, in fact, make a list, and then I promptly lose that list under a pile of stuff.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff just goes in my suitcase, regardless of whether I need it or not.
You just pack everything.
Right. And then some poor soul, it's usually me, has to cart that around.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah. You do travel rather heavily, don't you? I have known you to bring a lot of stuff. When you're traveling.
Yeah. I can't help it. If other people forget things, I usually have them covered, save for when they forget their skink. I really am just not prepared to help people with that.
Yeah, whereas I travel light. I'm kind of the opposite of you. I travel as super light as I can. I'll bring 6 or 7 skinks, usually no more than that.
But they're not for sharing.
They're all for me.
Yes. Those are self-serve skinks.
Don't even look at my skinks. I angrily growl at everybody else on the plane. You know how I get when I'm traveling.
Those skinks are all you.
Now, when you make a trip list, do you put the trip list itself on the trip list? That's
Maybe
the move.
That's where
the move.
I've been going wrong.
See? Do it.
Okay.
We'll that's going to that, turn your whole trip around.
If that helps at all.
You have some travel coming up, right, to MarsCon?
I do.
We're already frantically preparing to fly to Minnesota.
I'm trying to do a little bit every day to get ready. Alas, I know that that frantic packing part is still going to come at the end.
As we revealed last week, Cornflake is one of the featured performers doing your own concert as part of MarsCon out in Minnesota, February 20-something.
It is going to be February 28th through March 1st.
Yes, go see Cornflake. Do a whole concert at MarsCon, and you're going to have a new record out, new Cornflake album.
New Cornflake album coming, and I get to open for Mikey Mason.
Wow,
I mean,
you. jumping into show business for 2020.
This is just crazy.
No more of this stupid podcasting.
But MarsCon is the only place you'll see me. At this point, I don't intend to tour with the album. So National Plan for Travel Day. There's more to planning travel than just packing. But
it's not just about packing a skink.
Yes. It's thinking about where you want to go in the future.
But I guess that's step one before you pack.
Right. Right? So figure out where you're going.
Where would I go that my pet skinks would really enjoy themselves?
Absolutely.
And the answer for you, in your case, it was Minnesota. I have my own weird little trip coming up soon, I believe.
Yep.
And I think mine is essentially the exact opposite of yours.
Pretty much.
We'll see how that goes. Our packing and our planning will be very, very different. Except, of course, for the one equalizing factor of the skink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're both bringing skinks.
If I don't forget my skink. This
Travel with a lizard, people.
I have been known to forget my skink.
It's always a mistake. Hey, Cornflake.
Yes.
As we mentioned, it's time for our annual Flopcast Memorial Show, or shows. This is part one.
Mm-hmm. Buckle in, kids. Here we go.
One thing we're missing this year is the mayor of Chickentown.
Yeah.
She's always been part of our memorial shows, but the mayor is not available. Off on important mayoral business, I assume.
Right.
It's a census year, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think she must be running around counting all the chickens in Chickentown. So here's the idea. Most shows and magazines and things, they do their end-of-the-year retrospective shows, and they do a memorial thing. Here's everyone we lost over the past year. But their shows come out in December, in like mid to late December.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too early, I feel, because you're going to miss somebody.
Yeah, people can still die.
People die right up until the end of the year. And so we wait until January, and now here we are.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't wait deep into January this time. We're actually recording this on January 1st.
We've done good.
Yeah. We recorded last week's show on January 1st. We're still recording this week. It's still New Year's Day as we record.
It's going to be New Year's Day as we record all the shows of the year.
It is possible that we're missing someone just because the news hasn't broken yet.
That's good
possible because as we record, the year 2020 is just a few hours old. And we're just going to go chronologically.
Okay.
I have a list here. We're going to work our way halfway through the list. We're going to stop and then we'll resume for next week's show.
Good plan.
And we try to keep things relatively light, considering the subject. You know, we don't want to make these super sad shows either. This is a celebration of people whose work we enjoyed over the years. These are TV and movie actors and musicians and cartoonists, all that kind of stuff, you know. And it's a time to look back on what they did. It'll be good.
Yes.
And any of these people that we've actually seen in person, or especially if we've ever actually met these people, then we take a shot.
That's right.
Yeah. What are you drinking over there?
Oh, coffee.
We got coffee.
And water.
You have two beverages. Looks like water, but it could be anything.
It could be.
Good choice.
What about you?
I've got just the stupid coffee over here. Just plain old coffee.
I'm looking forward to sending these folks out in style.
Let's do it. Okay. And we're starting off with, from the nasty world of professional wrestling, Mean Gene Okerlund. And I guess we have to do a shot right now. Let's do this.
Yep.
We're one for one so far. Because I saw Mean Gene just maybe 2-3 months before he died.
Wow.
Yeah, Mean Gene Okerlund was a guest at Super Mega Fest 2018.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know if I'd ever seen him in person before, because I used to go to all the wrestling live events back in the 80s, but Mean Gene usually would not appear at the local live wrestling events, because he was always on the TV show, because
mm-hmm.
he was the interviewer. His main job was that he was the guy that was interviewing all the wrestlers.
You don't really have that element at a live show, do you?
He was really one of the stars of the TV shows back then, because the old wrestling shows in the 80s, half the show was just interviewing the wrestlers, because it was just all about promoting the live events.
Right.
Like, they'd show a wrestling match, and then they would interview the wrestlers for 5 minutes, and just it would just be Mean Gene screaming about what an amazing night of wrestling you could go to next week at the Providence Civic Center, or the Philadelphia Spectrum. You know, they would tailor these interview segments for each individual TV market. And then Randy Macho Man Savage and Hulk Hogan and Ricky Steamboat, everybody would come out and get interviewed by Mean Gene and just scream about how excited they were to be coming to Boston next week. And we better see everybody there. And it was just all about selling the live events.
And also, I would imagine getting to know the personality of the wrestlers, which only comes out so much as they're throwing each other around a ring.
Yeah, and these guys are great personalities. They were all great actors and performers, and so that's where they could really shine, you know, as actors, is selling themselves, these characters, during these interview segments. And Mean Gene Okerlund, very, very funny in that he never broke character. He just always seemed very, very serious. He took it very seriously, even though the whole thing was just absurd. And everybody he was talking to was just these insane caricatures, these monstrous, giant, goofy dudes. Mean Gene, we salute you.
Yes.
Moving along, up next we have Bob Einstein. And I knew Bob Einstein in the 80s by a different name, of course, and that was Super Dave Osborne.
Oh.
Remember this guy? He had a show, I think it was on Showtime. He had a cable show where Super Dave Osborne was his character, in which he purportedly was the world's greatest stuntman.
Oh.
It was a comedy show
yeah.
in which you would just see him kill himself every week just doing crazy stunts. But the whole thing was a goof. It was a character, Bob Einstein, brother of Albert Brooks, another classic comedy guy. Bob Einstein, who also did a lot of writing and performing. He was on Arrested Development in later years and on Curb Your Enthusiasm. But back in the 80s, yeah, he was Super Dave Osborne. And I don't think we mentioned him on the... Several years ago, we had Luke Ski, the great Luke Ski, on the show. And we did a list of real-life characters from the 80s.
Yeah.
Like people that were... They were like fictional characters, but they existed in the real world back in the 80s. Like Pee Wee Herman.
Exactly.
And Elvira.
The one I always think
yeah,
of.
Yeah, all those kinds of characters. A lot of the wrestlers would fit that description. And I think Super Dave Osborne would fit that category as well. And I think when Luke and I, when we did that list on the Flapcast, we gave it the Letterman test. You know, like our criteria was, if this person appeared on Late Night with David Letterman, would they be in character?
Right.
And Super Dave, I definitely remember from, because I don't think I even got the cable channel that his show was on. So I would only see him when he came on Letterman.
Ah.
And he was in character. They wouldn't say, please welcome Bob Einstein. They'd say, please welcome Super Dave Osborne, the world's greatest stuntman. And then this
Super Dave,
this goofy weirdo comes out. Super Dave Osborne, very funny man. Here's our first musician of our memorial show, and that's from superstars of pop music of the 70s, The Captain and Tennille. And this was The Captain, Daryl Dragon.
I didn't know his real name was Daryl Dragon.
What a name. That's a cool name.
Why does he even bother calling himself The Captain? He should be like Captain Dragon or something.
A way cooler name would just be Daryl Dragon. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. He went by The Captain. He always wore that silly sailor's captain's hat, like Captain Steubing. Goofy pop music back in the 70s. They did Do That to Me One More Time and Love Will Keep Us Together and Muskrat Love.
Muskrat Love that exists as a song. That always throws me off that that's a thing.
That was one of the weirdest things that ever happened. In a very weird decade, that was right up there near the top. There's a wacky music video of it. I think it's out there still. You can watch The Captain and Tennille performing Muskrat Love and little costumed muskrat characters start dancing around on top of the captain's sailor hat.
That is bizarre.
It's spectacular. In the 70s, that seemed completely normal.
Yeah, you can give the 70s that.
So they made some classic pop songs, and they brought us Muskrat Love, The Captain and Tennille, and Daryl Dragon. He was 76. Everybody's 76 so far, we should say. I don't think I gave their name, but
no, you did.
Mean Gene Okerlund was 76. Super Dave Osborne, Bob Einstein, 76. Daryl Dragon, 76. I don't know what that means. Probably nothing. Carol Channing, however, was 97 years old.
Yikes.
Carol Channing, a legend of Broadway, and her biggest show over the years, she kept doing the show again and again, was Hello, Dolly.
Yes.
I'm not a big theater guy, so I've never even seen Hello, Dolly. I know the song. I know Carol Channing performing that. And I think I knew her best from The Muppet Show.
Yes.
I remember seeing Carol Channing on The Muppet Show. And she had that crazy voice.
It was just precious.
Yeah, yeah. She fit right in on The Muppet Show.
Yeah.
She looks like a Muppet.
Yeah. She presents as a Muppet.
So, a beloved entertainer over the years. And man, 97 years old, Carol Channing. Next is someone we actually mentioned here on the Flopcast just a few weeks ago when we were interviewing Rick Goldschmidt about all the old Rankin Bass cartoons.
Oh.
We mentioned someone we lost this year at the age of 93 was Bradley Bulk,
yep.
who did a lot of voice work in the 70s, 60s and 70s. And two of his biggest roles were on the Tennessee Tuxedo Show. He was Chumley, the walrus.
Oh.
Tennessee Tuxedo's goofy little pal, Chumley. And also from Rankin Bass, from the classic, the one with the Miser Brothers, The Year Without a Santa Claus, those two elves, he was...
Jingle and Jangle?
Jingle and Jangle. I believe he was Jangle.
Ah.
And when you hear the voice, it matches the Chumley voice. It's that real goofy, dumb guy voice. Yeah, it was a very similar voice he put on for Chumley and for Jangle the Elf. those two goofy elves that ride the reindeer down to Southtown.
Because somebody had to do it.
Yes, that's Bradley Bulk. James Ingram is up next. Oh. James Ingram was only 66.
Yeah, I didn't see this one coming.
Yeah, and man, one of the great classic voices of pop and soul and R&B of the 80s. Certainly worked with Quincy Jones a lot. He was one of Quincy Jones' main vocalists, stuff like 100 Ways and Just Once.
Love those songs.
Yeah, and I think those were like, that was a Quincy Jones album. Like, Quincy Jones was the name of the artist on the record, but then he had all his people that were actually doing the vocals and things, including, of course, James Ingram. Did some classic duets, like Baby Come to Me with Patty Austin.
Love that.
And Somewhere Out There.
Yeah, that's right.
From one of those mouse cartoons.
That is American Tale.
American Tale, yes. I get them all mixed up with The Rescuers.
Bible.
That was with Linda Ronstadt. Another duet.
That's how I know about that is because I'm also a Linda Ronstadt fan.
Mm-hmm. James Ingram. And We Are the World, USA for Africa. He is a soloist. That's one of the solo voices in We Are the World. Yeah, one of the early, in the first verse, he has a solo line. And then at the end, he has some solo parts when they're kind of just...
Hollering?
Yeah, when they're all just going nuts at the end. I think that was one of those after-the-fact people when Quincy Jones was building the song in the studio. After the main recording session with everybody, he brought a few people back in later on, including James Ingram, as well as Stevie Wonder came back in and Ray Charles came back in. So those guys have extra vocals at the end of the song. I saw his brother perform just a couple of years ago. Philip Ingram is James's younger brother. And when I went to see Sheena Easton, Philip Ingram was singing backup and singing duets with Sheena. So
talented family.
Talented family. Oh, yeah. Next is a favorite of mine, a classic character actor at the age of 90, Dick Miller. Maybe the ultimate character actor. And this is a guy that was just in a million movies over the years and got started with Roger Corman even back in the 60s, maybe in the 50s, 60s. Roger Corman was just cranking out all those low-budget movies, and he put Dick Miller in a lot of them, maybe all of them.
Oh, kept him very busy, man.
Tons of movies. And then a lot of the directors that came out of Roger Corman's films would also cast Dick Miller in tons of stuff over the years. So he was popping up like in Gremlins and all kinds of movies through the 70s, 80s, 90s. So he's one of those guys. Nobody knew his name, but everybody knew the face.
He's that guy.
That guy. And in fact, just a few years ago, they made a documentary about him. The name of the documentary was That Guy Dick Miller. And it's a great, great documentary. I recommend people check it out. Learn all about his amazing career. He had the starring leading role in maybe just one movie that I'm aware of where he was actually the star as opposed to a supporting character role. And that was a movie called A Bucket of Blood back in the 60s. And it's a really cool movie. It's set in the world of the Beatniks. Like, it's at a Beatnik coffee shop. I knew him well in the 80s and 90s from some TV shows, from Fame, on the Fame TV show. And then in 1990, The Flash, the old live-action Flash superhero show. He also had a recurring role on that. So those are the places I saw him most. Another weird credit on Dick Miller is Pulp Fiction, which he is not in. He shot a scene for Pulp Fiction, which Quentin Tarantino ended up cutting out of the movie.
Oh.
So he does not actually appear. You can see the scene. The deleted scene is on some DVDs and stuff. But they have to dispose of a body in Pulp Fiction. And they go to this like junkyard automobile shop called Monster Joe's. And they meet Monster Joe's daughter there, who's played by Julia Sweeney.
Uh-huh.
From Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
But actual Monster Joe was Dick Miller. Who you don't actually see in the final cut of the movie. The great character actor, Dick Miller. Albert Finney was 82, and this is a guy with extensive credits. Acted in a million things over the years. I did not see very much of it. I know he did a Christmas Carol adaptation, I think in the early 70s, called Scrooge, where he was Ebenezer Scrooge. And later in his career, he did a few things with Tim Burton. He was in Big Fish and in Corpse Bride. I knew him best from Annie.
Oh.
The early 80s Little Orphan Annie movie. The Annie movie. He was Daddy Warbucks.
Oh, wow.
Yes. With young Aileen Quinn, you know, as heard here on the Flopcast.
Exactly. I was going
to
say.
There's sort of a connection we have to...
Not enough to drink over.
No. We're not drinking for Albert Finney, but a very impressive career.
Yes. We can marvel nevertheless.
Absolutely. From Albert Finney, Daddy Warbucks. Julie Adams was 92, and her big credit was the creature from the Black Lagoon. What's considered the last of the great Universal horror movies. That's a fun, cool movie. I recommend if you haven't seen it or if you haven't seen it in a long time, check it out. And Julie Adams was the woman lead, and she was very good. Julie Adams. Jan Michael Vincent was 74. Best known, I think, from Airwolf, which was like an action-adventure show in the 80s, mm-hmm. in which a guy went around fighting crime in a super futuristic helicopter.
Neat. How many seasons did that show last?
It ran a little bit, I think. Maybe a couple, at least. It did pretty well. Well, there was a movie called Blue Thunder, which was about like a crime-fighting helicopter thing. And they made a TV show out of Blue Thunder, and at the same time, they made Airwolf, which was sort of a borderline ripping off Blue Thunder. It was one of those situations where but the two shows came out at the same time. And Airwolf was the one that lasted with Jan Michael Vincent. The other kind of fun credit for Jan Michael Vincent is from the Banana Splits, old Hanna-Barbera live-action anthology show from 1968. There's a segment on Banana Splits called Danger Island, mm-hmm. which was sort of like these people running around having an adventure on an island. And he was the lead on Danger Island.
I laugh in the face of danger.
That was a wacky show. From Jan Michael Vincent. Cornflake, here's a big one for us. And get your reach for your glass.
This one made me sad.
Reach for your glass and let's drink for the great Peter Tork. Mm-hmm. It's not really a secret around here how we feel about the Monkees and about Peter Tork, who we lost in 2019 at 77. And yeah, you and I both saw Peter Tork perform with the Monkees.
So talented, so clever.
You saw them on their 50th anniversary tour, I believe. That was one of the Mickey and Peter version of the Monkees that toured for their 50th anniversary.
Yes, I saw them.
And you got a lot of Peter on that tour, obviously, because there were only the two Monkees that toured at that point.
I even get to see him play some of his own music. At mm-hmm. one point, Mickey left the stage and Peter did some of his own stuff, which I believe, if I'm remembering it correctly, he described it as a combination of Motown and bluegrass, which he called Mo-grass.
Sure. Peter was probably the most accomplished musician of all the Monkees, and they're all musicians and singers and songwriters, of course, but Peter could really play guitar and bass, and he ended up playing mostly bass in the old live version of the Monkees, because you had Mike Nesmith on guitar, so Peter kind of ended up on bass by default. But he was a guitarist, and he was a keyboardist, and really good. And the banjo, he plays terrific banjo as well. He would always play a little banjo during the Monkees live shows for many of their tours. One of the tours they did in the 90s, he came out at the beginning of the second half of the show. Peter came out by himself and played like a classical harpsichord piece on keyboard.
Wow.
Which was really beautiful. Not the best singer in the Monkees. His singing voice was a little weak compared to the other guys, and that's why you didn't hear him sing a lot. He'd do kind of the goofier songs, like Your Auntie Griselda. That was the big Peter Tork number as a lead vocalist.
And I enjoyed that immensely.
He would always do Your Auntie Griselda during every live show as well. And you hear a little bit of him on some other stuff, like Words and on Shades of Grey. And of course, the later live shows, he'd sing lead on a few other things as well.
But when you've got vocalists like...
Yeah, you got Mickey Dolenz and Davy Jones and Mike Nesmith. When they're in the mix, then Peter's not going to do as much singing lead, of course.
That would have been tough to measure up to, even if you were half good.
And back on the sitcom version of the Monkees, he was the goofy one. He was kind of the simple-minded character, which was sort of a sitcom trope back then.
Most fun to watch,
there would always
be
kind of a ditzy one on all the sitcoms back then.
Yes.
Somebody would have to be a little clueless, and that fell to Peter's character. Whereas in reality, I think he was arguably the most serious of the group. And certainly when it came to music, he was the most serious. Maybe Mike Nesmith might be a close second mm-hmm. in that category. But I think Peter might be your winner as far as a real serious Monkees musician. I did meet Peter a few times over the years. He was a regular, speaking of Super Megafest, where we saw Mean Gene Okerlund. Peter Tork lived in Connecticut. And so he would come up to the Boston area Super Megafest convention quite often. Certainly one of our all-time favorite bands around here in Chickentown is the Monkees, and a massive part of that was the great Peter Tork.
I remember the day. Remember the day when I heard the news.
Yeah.
I walked into a coffee shop, and I was a little bit teary. The barista at the coffee shop trying to sing something goofy to cheer me up.
What did she do? Your Auntie Griselda?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I think he was actually, he said he was too young to know any of the monkeys' music, but he noticed I was sad, so he just made up a silly song.
Most coffee shops require their employees to learn all the lyrics to Your Auntie Griselda, just in case this situation comes up.
Well, this coffee shop was not compliant, sadly. They did their best.
Well, at least they tried. Beverly Owen was 81 years old, and Beverly was the original Marilyn Munster on The Munsters.
Love The Munsters.
She did the first several episodes, and then they recast. So a different woman, Pat Priest, became Marilyn Munster for the rest of the run of the show. But Beverly was the original Marilyn, who, of course, was the normal one. She was like the beautiful, beautiful blonde lady surrounded by freakish monsters. Fun show. I was a Munsters fan when I was a kid.
Same.
Yeah. I didn't see much Addams Family when I was a kid. I was a Munsters kid.
I watched them both, and I would get a little bit, until I got a little bit older, I confused the two shows.
Oh, sure. But well, they came out at the exact same time.
Yeah.
Those shows debuted like in the mid-60s, same year, both these black and white monster families. And I think most people consider Addams Family to be the superior show, but I just never really saw much of it for whatever reason as a kid. So I was just all on board with the Munsters.
I like the Munsters theme song better.
It's a classic. Catherine Hellman, take a drink.
Yes.
We're going back to Super Megafest again.
Mona.
A few years ago, maybe 4 years ago, something like that, Catherine Hellman was a guest at Super Megafest. And yeah, Catherine, of course, you probably knew best from Who's the Boss.
Oh, of course. I, to this day, insist that she was the boss.
That's right. You settled the argument. You say it was Mona. It was Catherine Hellman.
100%.
I think you're right. I was way into Soap, which was a few years before Who's the Boss. Catherine was the matriarch on Soap, which was like a sitcom parody of daytime soap operas. And a few years after Who's the Boss, she was a regular on Coach as well, kind of the later...
Right.
The later season or two of Coach. So she did a lot of classic sitcom work. In the world of science fiction and fantasy, she also worked with Terry Gilliam in Brazil, especially a very memorable role in Brazil, that bizarre mid-80s science fiction movie, and Time Bandits before that as well. So a couple of classic Gilliam movies. And I think I mentioned on the show, when I saw her at Super Megafest, what I remember about that is she did a little interview in front of the audience at Super Megafest. And the guy that runs those celebrity interviews, I heard him explaining that he'd been told by her people, she's tired and keep it short. Like, she's not going to talk for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Bring her up. We'll have a few questions, but we're going to keep this really short. Get her off stage. You know, she cannot do this for long. And he tried to keep it short. He brought her up there and asked her a few questions. They had a little nice exchange. He was wrapping it up, and she grabbed the microphone, looked out at the audience, and said, does anybody have any questions?
Oh, see, I told you she's the boss.
And she kept going. She was in her mid-80s, and the guy had been told, wrap it up. She would not wrap it up. Catherine Hellman was indeed the boss. Here was a sad one this year, Cornflake.
Yeah, I don't think anyone saw this one coming.
Luke Perry was just 52 years old, and a guy that had been around for a long time, of course, because he started so young on a Beverly Hills 90210, which I was not a 90210 viewer. I never saw that show, but that was more your generation, I think.
It's true.
I bet you saw your fair share of Luke Perry back in the day.
Not my fair share. I could only watch Beverly Hills 90210 when I wasn't caught watching.
Okay.
But I would sneak it whenever I could.
Secretly watched Luke Perry. He just came up on the show recently because he was in the Buffy the Vampire Slayer movie.
The movie.
Which you mentioned on a whatever day not long ago, right?
Right, because it was Christy Swanson's birthday.
Right. But yeah, Luke was part of that original Buffy project.
More recently, he was part of a show that pretty much everybody I know has been absolutely wild about.
Yeah, and I'm one of them. I'm a regular viewer still. I don't know why, but I just cannot stop watching this ridiculous Riverdale show that is with all the Archie characters.
Here it just keeps getting more and more ridiculous.
It's so nuts. I'm a few weeks behind right now because I haven't had time, but I'm trying to keep up. And I've done convention panels about Riverdale. I think I've done three. I've done three different panels about Riverdale at three different conventions all across North America. They bring me to discuss Riverdale, and so I keep watching it. But yeah, that show is crazy. But he was like the one little oasis of sanity on Riverdale. He played Fred Andrews, Archie's father.
Yeah.
And they kind of did, they did and do a lot of kind of stunt casting on Riverdale in that they cast a lot of people that were teen stars in the 80s and 90s. Those are the adults. Those are the parents on Riverdale. So they've brought in, well, Molly Ringwald, you know, right, plays Archie's mother. And Robin Givens is on it. Gina Gershon. Oh, they brought in so many actors that we knew when they were younger. And he was excellent on that show. His sudden loss, you know, happened in the middle of filming the previous season. And in the middle of these bizarre, twisted, insane plots they do on Riverdale, they couldn't even really deal with it. So they didn't even acknowledge the loss of the character last season. They just didn't have time. There was no way to respectfully insert that into all that was going on. And so they held off. And the first episode of Riverdale, the whole episode was just this beautiful tribute to the character and to, you know, by extension, to Luke Perry.
Wow.
There was even a nice little cameo appearance during that tribute episode by Shannon Doherty.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was cool. And a good guy from all I've heard as well. And
by all accounts.
I've heard a little about him, and a smart guy and a skeptic.
Yes.
I believe. He was a critical thinker, and he was a guest at Dragon Con several years ago. This is like 10 years ago or so. And at one point, he was actually scheduled to participate in a panel on the skeptic track. They had him there doing all TV and movie talk and stuff, but he was supposed to do something with the skeptics. So he was into, you know, thinking critically and science and skepticism and all that good stuff that we are fans of. And I think he had a schedule conflict in the middle of Dragon Con, and he wasn't able to do it.
But
it was cool to hear that he was actually supposed to participate with the skeptics, which would have been fun. Luke Perry. Up next. Here's a goofy one. Going back to wrestling.
Yep.
King Kong Bundy was 61 years old, and I'm going to take a drink.
Okay.
I certainly saw King Kong Bundy several times wrestle live back in the 80s.
You're going to have to tell me about this guy. I don't recognize him.
King Kong, wow, how could you miss him? King Kong Bundy was one of the big guys in wrestling, literally one of the giants. This is a guy that would wrestle Andre the Giant because he was almost that big. King Kong Bundy was billed as, I think, weighing 450 pounds.
Yowza.
I don't know if that's true, but that's what they would say, you know, in the announcement. But he was a massive, massive man. Big, big, round, bald, angry man. He looked like a giant, angry egg.
Whoa.
And just never broke character. Just angry and evil. And that's King Kong Bundy. Just pure, I'm here to be a giant bad guy. And that's what he did. The very first time I went to see live wrestling in Providence, King Kong Bundy was there, and he was part of a battle royal. They did one of those 20-man battle royals where 20 guys get in the ring all at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to consider him a favorite in one of those, you know, in
right.
a battle royal, because who's going to throw King Kong Bundy over the top rope and knock him out?
Nobody.
The answer is, as soon as the battle royal started, all 19 other guys picked up King Kong Bundy together and threw him. King Kong Bundy was out. He was out in the ring area, mm-hmm. ringside, for less than a minute. He came out, the match started, 19 guys threw him out of the ring, and he angrily stormed out.
That's what I call a strategy.
It was blink and you'll miss him, but that was my first wrestling event live, and that was my first time seeing King Kong Bundy. And let's jump back to music, Cornflake, because what about the king of the surf guitar, Dick Dale?
Oh.
Was 81, and yeah, a pioneer of surf rock. And I think an innovator in the world of guitars and guitar amplifiers. Like, he actually worked on designing and modifying.
To make that sound?
Yeah, guitars and amps to get the sound that he wanted. And continued performing, at least occasionally, into his 70s, I believe. Because I think he would actually do a show in Boston, I think once a year, at the Middle East. A club club in the Boston area. Not too long ago, he was still doing an annual show in the Boston area. Dick Dale. Some surf guitar, you know?
I know.
Here's a guy I'm not too familiar with, but he was a writer, and a writer in animation, and I wanted to include Larry DiTilio, was 71, and his big important credit was he worked on He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, and its spin-off series especially. He's the co-creator of She-Ra, the Princess of Power.
Princess of Power!
And so we must acknowledge this guy who brought us She-Ra. I know Felicity, the mayor, is a big fan of the remake, the reboot.
Yeah, there's the new She-Ra.
Yeah, people are way into I haven't seen it, but I hear it's really good.
That's what I keep hearing, too.
Yeah. Another musician that we were a fan of was Ranking Roger. Ranking Roger was only 56, and he was the second vocalist in the English Beat, they're known as the Beat in England. Over here in America, they called them the English Beat.
Right.
And then also the kind of second version of that band, they kind of reformatted as General Public. And he was in both of those bands. Ranking Roger did some fun stuff, you know, Tenderness and Save It for Later.
Mirror in the Bathroom?
Yes. Yeah, that was another hit from the English Beat.
I really like that.
And Dave Wakeling is still out there. The front man of the English Beat still tours with a new version of the English Beat. I saw them a couple years ago. English Beat still out there, still great. But we missed the original, of course, Ranking Roger. There's a name. Let's jump back to Rankin Bass, though, because the other big name from Rankin Bass that we lost in 2019, a really big name from Rankin Bass, was Maury Laws. He was 95 years old. This is another guy that came up, of course, in our big Rankin Bass interview
a few weeks ago.
Yes, yeah. With Rick. Rick speaks very highly, of course, of the work of Maury Laws. This was the guy behind the music of all the Rankin Bass specials back then.
Which stands on its own.
Oh, massive. He composed most of those songs and would conduct the musicians.
Yeah. Such full and vivid music.
Oh, so many great, great classic songs, you know. The Miser Brothers songs. This is the guy that wrote those songs.
Yeah.
And a bunch more beyond that. All the holiday specials, of course, as well as the Mad Monster Party and The Hobbit. And so much stuff that he did for Rankin Bass. Practically everything. He did almost all the Rankin Bass cartoons. That's the guy behind the music. Maury Laws. Just amazing. Georgia Engel was 70 years old and a very familiar face, especially from sitcoms of the 70s and 80s. She had a recurring role on the Mary Tyler Moore Show. She was the wife of Ted Baxter, the Ted Knight character.
Yes.
She was everywhere in the 70s because she'd be on game shows and talk shows. And we mentioned Jennifer Slept Here, that goofy Ann Jillian's, the hot ghost who's haunting our new house.
Yes.
That sitcom from the early 80s. Georgia Engel was the mom on that show. And I actually just saw her last week, actually Christmas or Christmas Eve, during the holidays. The mayor and I were just looking for something goofy to watch. I was looking for an old, goofy 70s variety Christmas show, and we found a Carpenter's Christmas variety special from 1978. Their guests were Gene Kelly, mm-hmm. dancer Gene Kelly from Xanadu.
Yeah.
The McNichol siblings, Jimmy McNichol and Christy McNichol, and Georgia Engel.
Yeah, I think you get exactly what you were looking for.
That is some classic 70s variety TV. Yes, and Georgia Engel was great, and she had that real cartoony voice. I think she did some voice work as well as all her great sitcom work, of course. That's Georgia. John Singleton, director John Singleton, was only 51, because he started young. His first movie was Boys in the Hood
in the early
90s. Great movie.
Yes.
And I think that's the only John Singleton movie I've ever seen, even though he made a lot. He did
the remake of Shaft.
Yeah, with Samuel Jackson.
I saw that in the theater.
Did you see that?
I did.
How about the Poetic Justice with Janet Jackson?
Surprisingly, I have not seen that, but I feel like I definitely should.
Mm-hmm. Higher Learning was him. He did one of the Fast and the Furious movies, I believe. Made a bunch of stuff. I think the only one I ever saw was Boys in the Hood, you know, with Ice Cube.
Yes.
Cuba Gooding Jr., and that was a good one.
Yes.
Yeah, he started out strong, did some quality work. John Singleton. Take a drink, Cornflake.
Oh, boy.
Man, this is a big one, and let's talk Peter Mayhew.
Yes, let's.
Was 74, and that's our Chewbacca. I saw Peter at conventions many times over the years. He was on the convention circuit for decades.
Yes.
He loved touring and meeting fans of Star Wars all over the world. I think the first time I saw him in person was probably about 20 years ago in San Diego. And I didn't even know he was going to be there. He wasn't listed as one of the guests in advance. And I'm just wandering the main floor of San Diego Comic-Con, and suddenly I was standing right in front of Peter Mayhew. And I almost just lost it. I'm like, oh man, this is Chewbacca. Here's my childhood. Here's Peter Mayhew. He didn't have a crowd around his table or anything. You know, there's so much going on in San Diego
right.
that even Peter Mayhew can kind of get lost in the shuffle at times, you know? So I was able to just chat with him for a couple of minutes.
Wow.
Somewhere I have a picture. I took a picture of him just at his table. And he pointed out the shirt he was wearing. He was wearing a red t-shirt that had the logo on it for Revenge of the Jedi. which I say that very intentionally, Revenge of the Jedi. Because that was the original name before they changed the title to Return of the Jedi.
It was not what it turned out to be.
Yeah, the third Star Wars movie, originally the working title was Revenge of the Jedi, and he had a Revenge of the Jedi t-shirt. And he made sure I noticed. He was like, see this? See the shirt? Revenge. But yeah, what a sweet guy. And I know I saw him at Dragon Con once or twice, and he was at Super Mega Fest here in Massachusetts just a few years ago.
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember the audience Q&A that he was doing there, answering a little kid in the audience was asking him questions about Chewbacca, which you know he's answered these questions
literally
thousands of times probably, and was still doing a wonderful job of engaging the audience and talking about playing Chewbacca. And, you know, he was over 7 feet tall. And the gig was, we need a tall guy that we can put in a giant fursuit, you know, space dog, who's just going to make these crazy howling noises, you know. And that said, he made this a character that we love.
Yep.
You know, he was acting through the giant space dog suit and making that character work. And now there's a new guy playing Chewbacca now, you know, because Peter had to step down in his later years.
Yeah.
And everybody that does Chewbacca now, forever from now on, is working with what was created by Peter Mayhew.
And a total class act.
Yeah, absolutely. So we say happy life day to our favorite Wookiee, Peter Mayhew. Peggy Lipton was 72, and she first became known, I think, from the Mod Squad back in the late 60s, I guess, early 70s, Mod Squad.
Yes.
I did not see that show. These young people fighting crime, I guess, kind of a show.
Yeah.
Which they did a movie version of just a few years ago, I think.
That they did.
But that... young Peggy Lipton was star of the Mod Squad, and then I didn't really know her. She was off my radar until the early 90s when she was a regular on Twin Peaks.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew her from Twin Peaks. And I think she was even part of the remake of Twin Peaks that they did just a couple of years ago. They brought Peggy back for that. At one time, she was married to Quincy Jones, who we spoke of earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Quincy Jones, they were married. In fact, her daughter is Rashida Jones.
Oh.
You would know from Parks and Recreation.
Wow.
Yeah,
that I did not know.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's funny, if you see a picture of Peggy Lipton, I can almost see the resemblance.
Sure. Rashida has, you know, showbiz royalty parents.
I always knew that about Rashida, but I didn't know who it was.
Now you know, that was Peggy Lipton. You want to talk about some showbiz royalty? How about Doris Day?
Boy.
Doris Day was 97, and I'll have to admit, this is one of those people that when her death was announced, it was, Doris Day was still alive?
Right.
I had no idea. But wow, Doris was still hanging in there until the age of 97. And yeah, one of the great movie stars of the 50s and 60s. I knew her best from the silly comedies that she made with Rock Hudson.
Yeah.
They'd be on TV all the time when I was a kid. I remember it'd be like a rainy Sunday afternoon and you put on a UHF TV station. They would always be showing a Rock Hudson, Doris Day comedy from the 60s. And they're really good. Those movies hold up. They're quaint and they're sweet, but solidly put together, and they still hold up. Super entertaining little comedies like Send Me No Flowers and Pillow Talk. Tony Randall from The Odd Couple, he'd usually be like the supporting goofy backup guy in all these movies, and super fun.
You know what I know her from?
What's that?
Watch it. Hey, I'm Doris Day. I was not brought up that way.
I don't know what that means.
Well, Grease, the Sandra Dee song.
Oh, okay. I don't know Grease very well.
Oh.
I've never seen it start to finish.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, the song that Rizzo is singing, Look at Me, I'm Sandra Dee, one of the verses starts out, watch it, hey, I'm Doris Day. That's what always, I mean, Doris Day is not in the movie, but that's what always makes me think of her.
Yeah. Well, the other lyric I know for Doris Day is Wham, Wake Me Up Before You Go-Go, right?
Yeah.
Make the sun shine brighter than Doris Day. Which is no easy feat.
Because she was one shiny bright soul.
She would light up the screen. Doris Day. How about Tim Conway? Was 85.
Wow.
And
that takes me back.
A goofy comic performer of the 70s and I guess 60s, 70s, 80s probably.
80s, yeah.
The heyday of Tim Conway. I knew him in the 70s, certainly on the Carol Burnett show. And then his own show. When the Carol Burnett show ended, he did the Tim Conway show, kind of rose from the ashes of the Carol Burnett show and another kind of goofy sketch variety show. But yeah, he was part of that lineup with Vicki Lawrence and Carol Burnett and Harvey Korman.
Am I allowed to bring up Dorf on Golf?
Please do.
Okay.
Were you a big fan of Dorf on Golf? Did you ever actually see it? Because I saw the commercials.
I saw it over and over and over because I had it on a VHS.
Wow.
It was one of maybe three VHS tapes that I owned, and I watched it repeatedly.
I guess somebody had to be buying those Dorfman golf tapes because they sold them for years.
Oh.
I always see the commercials, and I think, who is buying these? And I guess there's my answer. It was Cornflake.
Me.
Okay. He'd get down on his knees,
and they'd put shoes on his knees,
and he'd be a little tiny man playing golf.
Trying to teach golf to people who were just not getting it.
Wow.
With there was the talented assistant Boom Boom, the girl, is what they called her.
Wow, you know these videos.
And then the tall guy that he was trying to teach golf was like a couple french fries short of a Happy Meals character. And it was Vincent Schiavelli.
Vincent Schiavelli. I totally remember. That was a weird dude.
Yes.
He popped up in all kinds of... There's it. You want to talk about a wacky character actor.
Yeah.
He was in the Dorf videos?
Yes.
I had no
That's
idea.
That's going to be on YouTube somewhere.
Wow. Yeah, people know Vincent Schiavelli from Fast Times at Ridgemont High and Ghost, I believe he was in. Even though I didn't see that.
Yes.
That guy.
Tim Conway, Dorf on Golf.
Tim Conway.
Informed all of my humor in fourth grade.
This explains a lot. Let's move on. Here's a weird one. I guess we should acknowledge...
The passage of Grumpy Cat.
At the age of 7, Grumpy Cat. I was a fan of Grumpy Cat.
Me too.
I'm not into goofy internet meme kind of stuff, but I did enjoy... Just a grumpy-looking cat.
That scowling cat.
Mm-hmm.
So cute, though.
So, okay, Grumpy Cat, we salute you. Leon Redbone.
Oh, yeah.
Was only 69 years old, which kind of surprised me, because the first time I saw him, like in 1978, he looked like he was 69 years old then. He had that look. This was a no-fooling-around, old-timey, Tin Pan Alley, kind of, you know, it's the year 1897.
Yes.
Get ready
to
rock.
And in Leon Redbone's case, it was the year of 1897 forever.
He was into that kind of old-timey turn of the 20th century kind of music. Yeah, I remember seeing Leon Redbone on Saturday Night Live, where I think they had him on several times back in the 70s, the original one of SNL. Suddenly they would just have a segment just watching this weird little dude with the glasses and the goofy hat and the big mustache playing these super old-timey songs, and I think, what's this? I'm a fan of his rendition of Christmas Island, classic Christmas song. Every year I listen to Leon Redbone's version of Christmas Island. The Mr. Belvedere theme song.
Oh, that's right. That was that guy.
That's a classic. I never saw him live, although I wish I had, because he was a regular performer at... There's a Chinese restaurant in Woonsocket, Rhode Island, called Chan's.
He was a regular performer there?
Yeah, it's a Chinese place. It's been there forever in Woonsocket, but they turned one of their rooms into like a jazz and blues room, and they would get pretty prominent people in there, including Leon Redbone. He would come there like every year for years and years. If you go in today, there's pictures and stuff on the wall about Leon Redbone. Yes.
Wild.
Yeah, he was terrific.
I forget that he was responsible for the theme song for Mr. Belvedere.
Mr. Belvedere. We are fans of around here. In sort of a similar vein, how about Dr. John?
Yeah.
Was 77, a classic New Orleans legendary musician. His big hit song in the 70s was Right Place, Wrong Time.
Yep.
Which you hear in Dazed and Confused, one of my favorite movies. And a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee. And visually, as Muppet fans around here, the inspiration for Dr. Teeth. I think the look of Dr. Teeth was heavily inspired by Dr. John. But yeah, just the classic New Orleans jazz R&B guy. Great, great stuff.
Yes.
Back to the world of sitcoms for Max Wright was 75. You know, from ALF?
Willie Tanner.
That was Willie. That's probably his best known role was, he's the dad, the Tanner family on ALF. You were an ALF fan, right?
Oh, yeah. Through and through.
Yeah, yeah.
Right now, I'm replaying in my head when ALF and Max Wright did that music video for the song ALF wrote, You're the One Who's Out of This World, Sweet Baby.
I remember that episode. I was not a big ALF guy, but I remember that. Suddenly, ALF is in love with the teenage daughter
Lynn,
in the house.
Yeah.
That's weird. And did they just abandon that? It was just the one episode? Was that ever spoken of again, that he was hung up on the girl?
Oh, there were always hints that...
Really?
Yeah. You got to go back and watch it because
I don't think I will. I find that disturbing. So he wants to eat the cat
and date the girl.
And he wants to date the daughter.
Yeah.
Okay. I like that girl. I knew her on Whiz Kids. She was on a show called Whiz Kids before Elf, which I was
cool.
a fan of.
The dad, boy, he put up with a lot.
But... Max Wright did a lot before Elf and after Elf. He was a regular on a sitcom called Buffalo Bill, which was Dabney Coleman's sitcom in the early 80s. And in the 2000s, I believe, was The Norm Show, Norm MacDonald's sitcom. He was also a regular on. A lot of classic sitcom work from Max Wright. And another comedy guy up next would be Artie Johnson, was 90, and best known from Laugh-In. This is a little before our time, for both of us. But Laugh-In was like late 60s, early 70s phenomenon of TV comedy.
One of my favorite gags, though, is from Laugh-In. There was a conversation between a woman and then an old man on the bench, and he'd say, "Do you believe in the hereafter?" And she'd go, "Sure." And then you'd go, "Well, you know what I'm here after."
That's your favorite?
Yes.
But you're a Dorf fan, we've established.
It's true. And since this is the death episode, I figure that this is an appropriate bit to bring up.
Uh-huh. I did not see much Laugh-In at all. A bigger credit from Artie Johnson for me, because he did some voice work as well, but Mr. Jaw was a shark cartoon from the mid-70s.
Mr. Jaw.
Yeah, Mr. Jaw came up. We did a shark list, didn't
That's
we?
Right.
A couple years ago, we did a top 4.5 sharks, and I mentioned all those shark cartoons like Jabberjaw. In the wake of Jaws, we had Jabberjaw and we had Mr. Jaw. And Mr. Jaw, voiced by Artie Johnson. And moving on, did you watch Lois and Clark?
I did.
The Adventures of Superman back in the 90s. And Eddie Jones was 84, and his big credit was Pa Kent.
Yeah.
Superman's adoptive father on Lois and Clark. That was Eddie Jones. Moving on, Rip Torn was 88. And again, one of these guys did a million things. What a name, Rip Torn.
Rip Torn.
Yikes. He was in Men in Black, I know. And the big credit, I think, that a lot of people know was the Larry Sanders Show with Gary Shandling. Did a lot of good work. Denise Nickerson was 62, and her big credit was Violet in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, boy.
This was the girl that blows up like a blueberry.
Yep.
And I've seen girls doing Violet as a costume at conventions once or twice, which is it's a great costume. They'll do a whole big inflatable suit, you know, to be Violet. Good stuff. That was Denise Nickerson. David Hedison was 92, and a couple of big credits on this guy. Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea was one of those Irwin Allen adventure shows of the 60s. He was the lead on that. And The Fly, back in the 50s, the original classic science fiction movie The Fly, which a dude accidentally transforms himself into a fly person.
Bummer.
It'll happen, you know?
I wonder how many people tried to slap him after that.
With a giant swatter. Yeah. And I think we have one more to wrap up this week. And a big one was Rutger Hauer, was 75. Again, a million things, a million acting credits. Probably the biggest one, though, was Blade Runner. He was that the scary leader of the replicants. Played a great, scary, creepy guy. So a lot of his roles were in that vein. I'm also a fan of a movie called The Hitcher from the mid-80s, in which he was like a creepy hitchhiking guy who terrorizes C. Thomas Howell, actually, from The Outsiders. a lot of great work from Rutger Hauer. So there you go, Cornflake. That's part one of our memorial list. We did it?
Yep.
We're halfway there. So let's wrap up.
And with that, we are at flopcast.net, on facebook.com/flopcast, on Twitter. Our handle is at flopcast, and on Instagram, the_flopcast.
Yes, that's where to find us online. Where to find us offline this coming weekend as this show comes out. Don't forget, Aresia.
Come see us at Aresia.
If you're around the Boston area, come to Aresia. It's a science fiction and fantasy convention. We're both going to be there just a few days from now as this show comes out.
Bundle up, brave the Boston waterfront, and then come on in.
It's winter. You're right by the harbor. Come on out to Boston for mid-January. It's delightful. It's Martin Luther King weekend, January 17th through the 20th. We'll be covering the whole convention for the Flapcast, and I'll be appearing on a bunch of panels all weekend as well. Please come hang out with us. We'll have fun. See you there.
Peace and cookies.
We are the Cigar Nerds, bringing nerdy sophistication and geeky indulgence on all topics, including movies, video games, science, and pop culture news, all from the Nerd Cave Cigar Lounge. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and wherever fine podcasts are found, including ESONetwork.com and CigarNerdPodcast.com. So fire up a cigar, it's time to get nerdy.
The longest-running live comedy music concert series is almost here!
Everything about this is dumb and so am I. Here we go!
MarsCon is happening February 28th through March 1st at the Hilton Minneapolis-St. Paul Mall of America, featuring the world-famous Dementia Track with performances by the Great Luke Ski, Devo Spice, TD's Kyle and Lynn Zilla, Mikey Mason, Mark with a C, Beth Kinderman and the Player Characters, Cornflake, Brett Glass, Carl Brown, Michael William Hunter, Il Nej, and this year's music guest of honor, Lauren Mayer. Plus Dementia Water Aerobics and merch at Table 27, Dementia SmackDown Wrestling, and more. Be sure to pick up your copy of the MarsCon 2020 Dementia Track Fundraiser MP3 album with over 4 hours of live music and comedy recorded at MarsCon 2019 for just $20. Visit MarsConDementia.com and click on Shop.
I'm so happy the way that song came out, and I'm absolutely shocked that we put it together in a week and a half.
For more info on MarsCon, visit MarsCon.org. Thanks for listening, funny music fans, and
we will see you at MarsCon 2020. Peace.
Woo! Audience, leave.
Okay, Cornflake, it's the Memorial Show after show. We should probably keep this relatively short.
Did you want to hear the 7 things that will ruin your trip if you forget to pack them?
Ooh, a little follow-up on the, what was it called? Travel Preparedness Day?
National Plan for Travel Day.
Okay, yeah. What are the 7 things? What is it?
7 things.
7 things to pack?
If you forget them, supposedly, they'll ruin your trip. Okay. Now, I'd argue with some of
these. Okay, let's move quickly.
All right. Sanitizer.
Yep.
Glasses or contacts.
Sure.
Itinerary confirmations. Hairbrush. Passport. Rain jacket, skinks.
There's really only one important thing on that list.
It's the skinks. I mean, the rest of this, your hairbrush, you can get somewhere else. And your passport, come on.
Oh, and a passport for the skink.
Right.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the Tee Public Store, which can all be found at ESONetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.